Okay, good evening, everyone. Please make sure you are on mute unless it is your turn to speak. Okay.
Hello, Umit is here.
Hi, Dr. Yapana. Thank you for joining. We are just about to begin.
Okay, sorry I was late a bit.
No problem. So again, all of our meetings are being recorded. My name is Barbara Torres. I am the board secretary of Magnolia Public Schools Board of Directors. We're going to get started with our regular board meeting today. Today is July 23rd. It is now 5:42 p.m. Thank you all for waiting patiently. With that, can our board chair, Rabbi Belia, call the meeting to order?
Good afternoon, everyone. We're calling our meeting to order with the opening agenda orders. I'll ask the board secretary to take a role of who's attending.
Thank you. Okay, so Rabbi Belia?
Yes.
Dr. Yapano?
Yes.
Dr. Dickbush? Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Here.
Mr. Orzal? Mr. Mohamedov?
Here.
Okay, thank you. 5 out of 7 board members are online. That is our quorum, so we can go ahead and continue. Next, we have approval of the agenda. If one of our board members can move to approve the agenda as presented.
So moved.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. I'll take votes on the approval of the agenda. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanel?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you. The agenda has been approved. Next, we have public comments. Our public comments are limited to 3 minutes per speaker. Unless there is translation needed, then we give 6 minutes. Do we have any public comments? We did not have anyone sign up, but is there anyone on the line who'd like to give a public comment at this time? Okay, no public comments. Thank you very much, everyone. Next, we have announcements from our MPS CEO and Superintendent, Mr. Alfredo Rubalcaba.
Good evening, board members, Magnolia staff, and Magnolia community. At this time, I don't have any updates. I will cover quite a bit later on in the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have approval of minutes from our regular board meeting that took place July 9th. So the motion is to approve the minutes as presented. Would one of our board members move that motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Rabbi Beliak and Ms. Covarrubias for the second. Okay, I'll take votes on the minutes. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Yapano?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Yeah.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you. The minutes have been approved. Next, we have closed session. So at this time, our board chair will announce our closed session items.
We are going into closed session to discuss matters relating to the employment of our CEO, two litigation issues, and we'll report out.
Okay, thank you. For members of the public, you can stay on the line. And they'll be back. Our board members will be back. Board members, if you have any questions, feel free to text me. You have the information. Good evening. Welcome back, everyone. We're back in open session. It is 7:02. Back in open session from our regular board meeting of the Magnolia Public Schools Board of Directors. Rabbi Beliak, do you have something to report out?
The board met with staff, and we've directed them regarding several issues that we agendized, and they're going to be working on them and keeping us informed.
Thank you very much. Okay, with that, we have our consent items. These are 3 items, starting off with Mr. Yoma's, with our approval of maintenance and destruction of student records policy. Mr. Yomas, can you please briefly present, then we will ask for public comments, and then we'll open it up to the board for discussion. Consent items are just brief discussions if needed. Mr. Yomas?
Good evening, board members. This is David Yomas, the Chief Accountability Officer. So the first agenda item is to approve a brand new policy that we wrote with YMNC, the maintenance and destruction of student records policy. This policy outlines what to do with student records, and it classifies them into three groups. The mandatory permanent student records, which we have to keep permanently. Mandatory interim student records, which we may keep up to 5 years after a student leaves us or graduates. And then permitted student records, which may be destroyed after 6 months a student leaves our school. So this policy is going to help us have consistent office procedures across all Magnolia schools. We were already practicing these, but we did not have a written policy. So we based this on the California Code of Regulations as well as LAUSD student records policy. It was reviewed and vetted by our legal counsel and ready to go. Currently, we keep student records in our school information system in our SAS, and the paper copies in student CUM files in the school offices. And then when students graduate, we move them to our storage. So we have all these already in practice, but this policy kind of details what to do with each kind of student record. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Yumas. Any public comments on this item? We're in item 3A. Okay, board members, any brief comments or questions? Again, we're still in consent agenda. Okay, next, we'll take votes on all of this together. So next one is 3B, approval of amended MPS policies. And there are a number of policies here. Mr. Yomas, do you want me to read them off or will you explain them?
Let's just read the titles and then I'll explain. You can read the titles.
All of them or one at a time so you can explain?
All of them.
Okay. So the amended policies are the attendance policy, education of foster and mobile youth policy, education of records and student information policy, homeless education policy, parent and family engagement policy, student freedom expression policy, suicide prevention policy, Title IX harassment, intimidation, discrimination, and bullying policy, uniform complaint procedures, UCP policies and procedures, volunteer visitation, shadowing, and removal policy.
So all these policies were kind of like 3 years old, some of them are 4 years old, so we went through an intense review of them with our legal counsel because there has been a lot of updates to the legislation and the ed code in the recent years, so we wanted to be up to date. We closely worked with YMNC. So all those policies are now up to date. In your board report, I kind of tried to put a summary of changes for each of those policies. So what main points were like updated. I'm not sure if you want me to go through them because 10 policies, I have at least 3 bullet points under each one, but they have been made up to date. Some of those are already included in the student parent handbook. That's the next agenda item. And some of those are referred to in the student parent handbook. And all of them will be posted on our school website, will be made available in the school offices, and majority of them will also be in the student parent handbook. So those are all needed changes. The suicide prevention policy, that we're going to approve only applies to our private sites, though. The co-located sites will continue to implement the LAUSD suicide prevention policy. The majority of the other ones are like legal updates. The visitation volunteer policy includes some health and safety protocol updates due to COVID-19, but more detail will be in the health and safety policy that HR will bring to you. The others are, yes, mostly legal updates.
Thank you, Mr. Yumas. Any public comment on this item, item 3B, approval of amended MPS policies?
I do want to note that under excused absences, tardies for classroom-based attendance, we have item 5. Somebody can be excused who's a student who's doing jury duty. That looks pretty good to me if people are old enough in our school to do jury duty. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Bilia. Any comment, any other comments or questions from our board members? Okay, last consent item is item 3C, approval of MPS 2020-21 student parent handbook. Mr. Yomar.
Okay, again, this is a routine annual item. We update our student parent handbook to be up to date. But this year, there is a whole revamp of the handbook, so it will look like a brand new handbook to most of us. So what happened was I redesigned the student parent handbook to have 7 sections. 1, academics, educational equity for all student groups. 2, academics, high school and beyond, so this is the college section. Attendance and records, health and wellness, safety and security, stakeholder engagement and complaint procedures, and information sheets and notices, the forms. So it's a redesigned handbook so that we can find things easily in the handbook by referring to those topics. If you check district student parent handbooks like LAUSD or other districts, they just go alphabetical. And it's not organized by themes, so it's so hard to find anything you're looking for in those handbooks. And they are kind of like all over the place. For example, let's say English learners, right? There may be 3 different policies on English, like the notices, the bilingual education, or the testing. They will be all different places in other handbooks because they go alphabetical. But this handbook, it's organized around topics, so you can easily find related topics next to each other. So it's really nicely organized. Makes it easier for parents, students, as well as our like administrators and teachers. It will work well for training purposes as well. The other big change was, you know, LACO, the Center for Public Education, has a manual for annual required parent notifications. So they have like more than 100 required notifications in their manual, which we have to include in our handbook. So that's another thing why the handbook got kind of like larger. But I was able to organize all of those required notifications into those 7 topics. So again, it will make sense when a stakeholder reads the handbook. So those were the big changes. And then the report has page by page what changes are made. And I won't go through all of them, but also visually it's nicer with school pictures, you know, aesthetically more appealing. Added COVID-19 section about grading, we made more clarification for teachers. Added new policies we didn't have, like harm or destruction of animals. Added gate information. So all the policies that are in the consent, so they were updated. Work permits for students. An important change was the advanced and honors diploma requirements are now much better aligned with the California School Dashboard College Career Readiness Indicator, because when we first developed it, it was like 5-6 years ago. So we kind of needed to revise it to, you know, to be aligned with the college career readiness. So it means that if a graduate is receiving an advanced and honors diploma, at the same time, they'll be satisfying the college career readiness indicator. So this is really going to help schools to monitor each and every graduating student being college career ready. AP testing fees, it's in there. Custody issues and social media. There's a huge health and wellness section, which is separate now. It's also like healthcare coverage, opioids, and, you know, sexual health, all of those are in there. Updated acceptable use of technology policy in the handbook. we are in distance learning, and they're adding Student Square as a program where students and teachers can communicate with each other. Off-campus lunch policy is added, transportation policy, they're in there. Parent and family engagement policy is updated. We have new committees now called PAC, Parent Advisory Committees, who will help with LCAP and all other plans. Included other notifications, and new forms for parents and students. So everything will be in one place. If you don't have all these in the handbook, the schools would be required to mail out tons of letters and info, separately, which would be confusing. So it's good to have all in one place, even though it makes a larger size handbook.
Thank you. I'm sorry, did I interrupt? Excuse me.
No, I'm done. Thank you.
Let me just ask for public comments. Any public comments on the student parent handbook?
Yes, where would we find the parent handbook?
So student parent handbooks, after approval tonight, will be posted on each school's website, as well as the MPS general website. They will also be available in the school offices. If you would like to receive a printed copy, the school office manager will make it available to you. Schools also share it through their Parent Square apps. So these are different options. So website, Parent Square, and then it will be available in the office. Please, if you're a parent, you can always contact your school office and they can print it or email it to you.
Okay,
the
thank
Spanish
you very much.
Translation, no problem. The Spanish translation is not really taking a little bit more time, because after approval, it takes a little bit of time to translate it, but that will be available very shortly as well. Thank you.
In addition to that, all of our items presented to the board today and at any meeting, they are public on our website. So when you open up our website, there's a pop-up menu, and you should be able to click the link on there. So the handbook, along with everything being discussed today, is on there. Okay, any other public comments?
I'll say on behalf of the board that this is often very detailed and important work, all three of these things. Often not heralded and appreciated enough until we need them. And I just want to thank you for continuing to pay attention to the question of how do we communicate with parents and students, and how do we make this information public, and your insights into how to organize this so that it works as well as it can. It's a lot of information. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Yamas. Thank you, board. So with that, the motion would be to approve the consent agenda, item 3A, 3B, and 3C. Would one of our board members like to move that motion?
Yeah, I have the motion.
Everybody.
Everyone. I didn't want to move first. One more time. Who would like to move the motion?
I'll move it.
I move the motion.
Okay, I'll have Ms. Gonzalez as to make the motion, and Dr. Dickbarsh second.
Okay,
I'll take votes. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Yapanel?
Yes.
Dr. Dickbarsh?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Thank you. The consent items have been approved. Please make sure you're on mute if it is not your turn to speak. Next, we have action item 4A, approval of updated 2020-21 school reopening plans for Magnolia Public School campuses. And Mr. Ajar, Chief Academic Officer, will present.
Yes, good evening, board members, Magnolia staff, and community members. This is Arvind Ajar, Chief Academic Officer. So in front of you is our updated reopening plans. As promised in the last board meeting, we said that we will bring our reopening plans for action for your attention. So since then, there have been developments, and this item is going to detail those developments, and we'll have several staff members presenting. As you know, we've had a task force working on this since May 5th, and we have been working on safely reopening our schools with high quality and standard space instruction in mind. So we received several guides and orders from the state and counties, and then accordingly we updated our plans. And the staff is recommending on par and in compliance with the orders that our schools should be starting in distance learning. And I will talk about those details. So with that, I'll turn it to our CEO, Alfredo Rubalcaba, for the introduction.
Thank you, Erdinç. Once again, good evening, board members, Magnolia staff, and Magnolia family and community. As Erdinç said, quite a bit of developments. Last time we were here before you, you know, we showcased our preliminary plan. We showed you the data specific to how our students were feeling, how our staff was feeling, and how our parents were feeling in terms of what model they wanted us to, you know, bring forward and implement at our schools. Since then, unfortunately, you know, the surge rate of COVID-19 has increased, not only globally, but here in California. And, you know, that's also resulted in hospitalization rates and also deaths. And our thoughts and prayers are with all the families that have lost someone due to COVID-19. So this surge that has happened has caused, obviously, all of us to focus first and foremost on the, you know, safety, the health and safety of all of our community. And with that, you know, on July 13th, LAUSD with San Diego Unified did come out and, you know, declare that because the surge rate and all the other related matters to COVID-19, that they were going to start in a distance learning format when schools reopen. So we took that to heart because of the fact that obviously we share 5 campuses with the district, and you know, we do things very closely with the district. But we also started to get a sense that that was our direction as well. So when that announcement came out, we were very committed to then following suit. So we did communicate to our families on that Friday in the morning that we were also going to recommend to our board that we do the same and open up in a distance learning model format once our schools open August 10th in Santa Ana, the 18th in our LA schools, and the 31st in San Diego. So that same day, the governor, you know, did come out with updated order, health order. And that order followed the LA County Department of Public Health order, which was the first time schools received a health order with directives on it, very extensive list of, you know, when we open schools, here are the multiple things we need to do. But the order that came out with the governor's announcement even, you know, kind of went further as to saying that all the schools in the 32 counties that were currently on the monitoring list, that those schools would not be opening up in an in-person manner, that those schools would have to open up in a distance learning format. And the only way they could consider opening up in person would be if they were removed from the monitoring list.
We're hearing other background noise. Can you please make sure you're on mute? Thank you.
So those counties would have to have, you know, they would not be on the monitoring list for 14 consecutive days. So for us, you know, having schools in LA County, Orange County, and also San Diego County, we knew that we fell into that bucket. But we had already announced this, but this was now verified by the governor's order in the LA County Department of Public Health. So then the focus now becomes still focusing on reopening in person, but also now continuing the work of ensuring that we have a strong program when it comes to our distance learning model for our parents. And with that, today you will hear some of that. But from a timeline perspective, that means that today we are asking you to approve our plans when schools do reopen, our updated plans, to approve it so we officially can say that we're reopening our schools in this format. And then August 6th, we will have to have a special meeting for us then to bring before you policies associated with COVID-19 when it comes to ensuring that we're protecting our students and staff and community, you know, during this time. And then also be able to bring some more robust plans that show you what our distance learning program will look like from a scheduling standpoint, from just a curriculum and instruction standpoint, and some other related matters to the other four areas, operations, you know, social emotional support systems, family and community engagement, and health and safety. So that's what we'll bring before you on the 6th, those details and those policies, and then very excited to then launch into the new year with our you know, with our model and with our families and parents. And although we've been doing this in July as well, in summer school, we know that what we did from March 13th to July 5th and July 12th, it'll definitely look much more, it would look different, because we're going to accelerate and amplify some of the work we do in these areas. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Erdinch and the team to get us going on the rest of our plans.
Yes, thank you, Alfredo. As Alfredo said, we have been working on this for quite a while, and we're excited that we do have the light at the end of the tunnel that we have, although we were not expecting this, based on the results that we presented to you last time with the survey results, that we were expecting some sort of hybrid in-person instruction happening in our schools. And then we had plans for that, because that was a big endeavor in terms of getting the schools ready for instruction, operation, finances, and safety and protection for all. We needed to switch gears quickly and continue improving our distance learning programs and offerings. So that's that in our mind that at one point of time we will, I'm hoping in the future, very soon, when it's safe, we will have our students in the seats and teachers teaching face to face and in person. So so the distance learning is the developments from the governor order on July 17, and it came with a specific definition of distance learning, and that's coupling up with the legislative requirement, specifically SB Senate Bill 98, and explaining what the distance learning should look like. We needed to reflect those expectations in our plan. So as improvements in our distance learning plans, we are making several changes, including in adding new instructional programs, addressing learning, addressing the mitigation for learning loss, providing staff with professional development, you know, on distance learning, and improvements in establishing set class schedules and meeting times, improving our engagement, attendance, and communication means, and further training our parents and students, as well as you know, coming up with targeted supports and interventions for our English learners and special education students. So so these are the areas that we have been working on, but now we know that, you know, we won't have these programs in face-to-face. So all of our efforts and focus will be on distance learning from this point on. So these are some the areas that we have been working on, and we'll continue strengthening our distance learning programs. We, as we updated you in the past, that we, you know, we don't have access issues anymore, because all of our students, they do have access to Chromebooks and hotspots. You know, all of our curriculum are in digital format, and we're even adding more programs and removing some more barriers for ease of access and communication. So these are coming in place. So with that, I'm going to turn it to my colleague David Yilmaz, Chief Accountability Officer. He's going to talk about updated health, safety, and protection measures under the new distance learning environment that we're moving into. David.
Good evening, board and public. Good evening, board and public. I would like to invite our Assistant Executive Office Manager, Jennifer Hook, to present it. She did a really great job following up with all those measures and then turning them into action plans. So, Jennifer, are you on the line?
Yep, I am here. Good evening, everyone. My name is Jennifer Hook. I have been spearheading a lot of the projects with the health and safety team. As mentioned earlier, we are working with YMC to create a standardized COVID-19 policy and procedures. A lot of the procedures that we will have will take into account all of the local county orders and the local and the state orders that are being passed. With recommendations that include workplace policies and practices to protect staff, like making sure they all have PPE availability, that they have physical distancing and materials to ensure that distancing or protect them if that distancing can't be met. Measures to ensure infection control, so developing disinfection plans and exposure and isolation procedures and measures that communicate to the campus community and the public. So making sure there's adequate signage throughout the campus and making sure that our staff, our students, and our parents are trained and updated whenever there's a change in procedure or a change in policy, and just making sure that they're constantly reminded of the new norms. We also have recommendations that would ensure equitable access to critical services. So our IEP and 504 students, we want to make sure that they're getting the services that they need and the accommodations that they need when we do reopen physically, and making sure that all of our students have access to things like homeless services and meal distribution. Mr. Yuma?
Yes. So we can move forward with the operations section. If, and we'll take questions at the end or anytime. Yeah.
Is Mr. Suwad on the line to cover operations?
Yes, I'm here. Hello?
Take it away.
Go ahead, Suwad.
Hey, the good evening, board members. I'm going to go over operations sections today. As you know, we worked a lot, and this is kind of a learning curve for us as well. The first pandemic, I hope this is going to be the last one that we have faced. So a lot of hard work with the attorneys and our team members, the principals, the home office team, our executives actually worked hard on this. So basically, we updated our handbook throughout this process. And now our handbook actually is updated. We have the telework policy included in this one. Health and safety policy is updated in respect to the COVID-19 accident and incident reporting is finalized. These last two actually are updated with respect to the state and county guidelines for all counties, actually for all of our schools. As you know, we have 8 schools in LA County and one in Santana Orange and another one in San Diego. So our attorney actually prepared our plans for health and safety and vaccination reporting with respect to all state and county guidelines. So we have one for all at this point. We also started actually, which is not written here, but we also started visiting, scheduling the trip to our schools to make in-person checks with the school administrations. The first of all, 10 schools will be Santa Ana tomorrow. Our CEO and myself and Mr. Ontiveros is our facilities director, and Jennifer will be at Santa Ana campus tomorrow in the morning to go over all the checklist items. We're going to use LA County's checklist, which is a very comprehensive one. So we're going to give feedback to our schools for any possible hybrid and in-person access school openings in the future. With this, the second section, LA County Public Health Order, is a very detailed one. So it also has like case scenarios, like in case you have one person actually, you know, having symptoms or somehow contracting this virus, it's 2 persons, how about 3 or more? What about the entire actually staffing? What percent actually is, you know, of the people, if they contract this virus, then, you know, then we have to close the school. Every actually possible scenario in this one. So it's the most comprehensive directive that we received from any kind of actually public agency at this point. So we're going to use it as our practical constitution at this point for COVID-19 readiness. We also updated all of our forms and compliance visits. So during tomorrow's visit, we're going to have some kind of a shared spreadsheet that Jennifer also prepared actually, and we will share all the feedback and schedule another visit for each site in the next 2-3 weeks. As of today, we updated actually all the training list. Normally we have mandatory training and recommended training every year. Starting from the first day of the school year, in case, you know, this is like a 12-month employee starting from July 1st, but most practically at the first day of the school year, which is around August actually 1st, when the teachers are coming back, we have the mandatory and recommended trainings that we follow up using PACOM system, which is our human resources system. So that actually system already has authorized request of training. Now this year, we are including highly recommended COVID-19 trainings into this one, so that all of our staff actually will be able to follow up for each of them to make sure that they do get a training, at least actually one or two trainings about, you know, how to keep safe in such a pandemic era. This is, you know, added to PAYCOM as of today. So, well, we have options as well, like general trainings, like video training, Zoom training options, but we wanted to make sure that every person actually logs in and then gets those trainings and finalizes, and we have some kind of like an online fingerprint that shows us that they finished those trainings in person. So PAYCOM is going to give that option to us, and we updated our systems as of today. And finally, actually, we prepared a communication actually channel for our administrative staff on the school site. So in case anything about, you know, coronavirus happens about the staff member, or if they want to ask a question about anything, we generated this email account. It's like an email group, COVID-19@magnoliapublicschools.org. So this is actually facilitating all the conversations happening around corona, kind of a filter that we are using, filtering actually these conversations about coronavirus, you know, from any other conversation. And the next one is the U.S. Department of Labor announced new action regarding how American workers and employers will benefit from the protections and reliefs. We actually are implementing it in our HR system, which is PAYCOM at this point, and the implementation of the policy has been shared with all employees. So employees actually are either communicated through general emails, or we have some reminders in the PAYCOM system, employee self-service system, that they have to go inside, and then when they see the bell, it's some kind of notification, they can click on it and sign it, just like they do for employee handbook and all other things throughout the year. The purchases and plans that we made for coronavirus, so this one actually, we prepared this document a little bit earlier. There's $208,000 at the time that I prepared this document, but as of now, it's close to $300,000 purchase we made. Some of those are made in bulk, so we just receive it and then send it to the schools, and then it becomes actually a reconciliation in our accounting books. The details of these purchases, as you see, actually, we purchased PPE items. We made facility improvements, for supplies, disinfection towels, and sneeze guards and barriers, actually, to keep our staff safe in case of a hybrid or in-person, actually, instruction starting. The highest amount is the IT, actually, the materials. Now, we use 2019-20 budget to make all these purchases. We also have actually plans to get more items, especially for Chromebooks and data packages that you see over here. So as of now, it's around $200,000. All of these are for 1920. For 2021 school year budget, we will also get more in case actually our schools need more. We made the plans, so everything is in control at this point. And finally, for medical supplies like thermometers, we also purchased actually those items based on the school. These are like no-touch items. So this is not like the stations that, you know, we keep seeing in China or something. It's like basically, you know, simple no-touch thermometers. This is not like a general, you know, okay, welcome and then wash your hands here, right here, like a station. And then this is the sanitation station at the end. Like a very expensive model. This is not that one yet. They're very actually basic, you know. Here is your mask in case you don't have it. Here's the hand sanitizer. Here's just before coming in, you have to actually get a certain moment, you know, temperature check. So to just make sure actually we are doing whatever we can. Based on the school needs and based on actually how this COVID-19 continues, of course we can increase the list of the items in the list to purchase depending on the needs of the school. So further plans, in case of a hybrid learning or hybrid instruction, as you know, let's say there's like 30 desks in a classroom, we can't use all of them because of the 6 feet requirement. So we made some calculations. In a general simple standard classroom of 900 feet and 1,000 square foot. We should maximum the number of desks, maximum number of desks you can have is like around maybe 11 desks or something. So this means we need to find a place actually to store all these extra desks. We're talking about 18, 19, maybe 20 out of 30 desks in a classroom. So that means we need to either leave a storage room or something. But because the distance learning actually replaced the hybrid or in-person at this point, we do have more time. So as I said, starting from tomorrow, we are visiting our sites. Part of our discussion will be in case we start 2 months later, for example, how many of the desks actually we need to move out of your school. So we have some kind of a tracking mechanism for that one as well. Also, if the school starts in hybrid learning, then we need to have some kind of like a separators, dividers actually, either around the student's desk or between the students, so two-sided or three-sided. We made actually, you know, some sampling and purchases for this, so we are ready for this one as well. For deep cleaning and janitorial services, Patrick actually had some, you know, conversations to make sure that we are ready in case we need to replace our current practices with some kind of a professional one. The CMAs, Jennifer already told, but we had actually a deal with a third-party company. Now we have the certified nurse assistants for our schools, like 6 hours, and we have, except for MSA 8, because they are actually in a public school choice facility, which already has one. All other schools are going to be controlled by a centered registered nurse. So CNAs connected that one. So around more than $500,000 is allocated in all of our schools at this point, except MSA 8. What we received and what we are to receive, Los Angeles County actually said they will send us some PPEs. We already gave them the number of certificated and other staff members actually. It was like a couple of weeks ago, so we are still expecting that. And also we are expecting some $1.2 million of CARES Act, and there's more actually coming in case they accept the second wave of the stimulus fund. Basically, this is it. Thank you so much, Erdinç. So who's next?
Hello? Yeah, so thank you, Suat. So we'll have Dr. Callahan updating us with the social emotional aspect of this start with distance learning.
Thank you.
Dr. Callahan. Yeah, maybe she's not available. So let me cover that aspect as well. I mean, it's not much different than what we presented to you last time. As we know, the social emotional needs will be also at the forefront for our staff and students. Our team task force of reopening have been working on strategies, programs to implement for students and staff with the reopening. So we will continue as planned with the distance learning as we plan for the hybrid environment. So there will be several programs embedded into student schedules, daily schedules for the social emotional aspect of wellness, and we'll continuously monitor students and staff well-being, and making sure that we increase some of those human interactions with the new distance learning model as well. You know, more collaboration, project-based learning. Students having part of the discussions more, connecting with their peers, learning with them, and learning from them. So that's going to be part of the program, including. Some of the trainings that we will be providing our staff, trauma-based interventions and crisis management, and noticing symptoms with the students and taking necessary actions needed. So that's going to happen as part of our reopening plans. The last section is part of our framework and the work that we heard from the parents and the students and staff that we needed to increase the engagement and communications and our group with family and community engagement has been working on this and we'll have our Dean of Academics from Santa Ana, Maria Rowell, highlighting some of those programs. Maria, are you on the line?
Hello, yes. Hi, thank you, Mr. Ajar. So good evening, board members, and good evening to all my fellow MPS colleagues. I took part in the Family and Community Engagement Subcommittee, and what we came up with was we wanted to ensure that all of our stakeholders, students, staff, and community members would remain healthy and safe, as well as follow the best practices that we have recommended. One being we want to ensure that there are effective communication systems, that our school sites are utilizing Parent Square as well as their school websites. We want to make sure that we engage all of our stakeholders via our town hall to continue with our town hall meetings, to continue with weekly principal and coffee with admin updates. We want to maintain and utilize all of our community partnerships. So for example, in Orange County, utilizing Western Youth Services, Help Me Grow, UCI, CHOC, and OCDE, as well as other key systems and supports. Areas of focus, we want to engage all of our families in the decision-making process. Continue with our multifaceted communications methods through our different platforms, like Parent Square I had mentioned earlier. Multidimensional messaging, whether that's through a marquee outside the school, a whiteboard, utilizing our COVID tabs within our school website. Establish and inform our families on all of the protocols and procedures. Maintain a welcoming environment for all of our families. We want to incorporate flexibility. There are budget implications. Support our families when children are ill or even at home. And we want to, of course, create effective communication systems. Thank you so much for your time and attention. Mr. Ajar?
Yes. Thank you, Maria, for the presentation. So we'll make the closing with Alfredo for the next steps. Our CEO and superintendent, go ahead, Alfredo.
Yes, thank you, team, for that elaborate presentation. So I think what's next is definitely getting a feel from our parents, our teachers, and our school communities. And we did this when we started this process through the town hall meetings to get a sense of what our families are thinking now that we've notified them that we are starting in a distance learning format and to see some of the things that they want to see as we open schools and some of the safety protocols that we have to inform them and train them on. So all these discussions will happen at the town hall meetings. And as we said before, preparing our school sites to open in person is a priority. So we will continue doing that through the school site visits and making sure that all the checklists that have been provided to us by the state and county health orders and all the different guidelines and planning frameworks that we received, we're able to now operationalize all those things, and that'll happen by us working very closely with the school sites. So then we will bring updated plans. We did put their final plans, but as you know, this pandemic has caused us to change things on a dime. So we will definitely bring you the policies and, you know, the plans with a bit more detail for you to approve on August 6th. And then, you know, the most important thing of creating any action plan and creating any policy is to ensure that those, you know, those kind of pertinent pieces of information are now translated into trainings. And so that work happens as soon as we get staff to come back to us during in-service, and parents and students to come back to us virtually in orientations, and all the trainings that we have that you could see there on our presentation, all the way up to, you know, August 7th when we introduce our new teachers to what, you know, makes Magnolia special and how they're going to contribute to our success. So we look forward to that. We look forward to our first opening of our school virtually, which would be August 10th at Santa Ana. And then next would be MSA 1 through 8 on the 18th. And then last but not least, San Diego, which starts the 31st of August. So with that, thank you for allowing us to, you know, explain all these things to our board and community. So I'm going to open it up to questions. But before I do that, I'll turn it back over to Barbara.
Thank you. Any public comments on this item? Okay, board members, any questions or comments?
I'd like to, on behalf of the... Go ahead, Diane.
Quick question. So since we're having online courses, how does it work for orientation for our new coming parents?
This is Adi Chajar, Chief Academic Officer. So there are different aspects of orientations, in the past, you know, during those orientations, we used to pass student schedules, you know, collect paperwork, you know, distribute uniforms, introduce staff and programs, like a sort of, you know, presentation within the programs and such. So the teams are now, you know, dissecting different aspects of those orientations. You know, certainly, you know, any paperwork needs to be turned in person, but other aspects like presentation, the teams presenting the new programs, staff, and the other aspects of reopening virtually, you know, as well as the distribution of the school schedules and other materials that will be online as well.
Okay, thank you.
Rabbi Belia, can you say something?
I wanted to thank the staff. I attended two or three meetings of the process, and it's a very complicated process, and I was just impressed from what I heard, and just the board appreciates the work that has gone into trying to think through a lot of things that were moving parts and will continue to be moving parts. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else from our board? Comments, questions?
I have a question. Suat, you mentioned the issue of how much it's cost us to plan. And I understand that we have some grants for this. How much have we committed? Let's say one of my concerns has been the process by which people are, when we finally do see them, get tested every day or get have their temperature taken every day. Are we incurring an expense for holding these people in reserve? How does that work?
Can you clarify about keeping people in reserve? What do you mean by that?
Well, theoretically, there was going to be someone who was a trained person to take temperatures and sort of be a monitor.
The CNAs, yeah. Actually, we do have a breakdown for each site. So we had two options, Rabbi Beliak. Either we were going to have internal, actually, nurses, or we go with a third party. So we decided to go with a third party since we don't know actually how long this pandemic will continue. Maybe in the future we won't need actually on-site. We never had actually nurses on-site in Magnolia. So we decided to go with the third party. So they came up with a couple of options for us. And they showed us actually if we go with registered nurses whose hourly rate is around $85 to $90 per hour, or we have actually one registered nurse centrally actually supervising a group of certified nurse assistants, which we call CNAs in the report that we have in front of you. So these CNAs, hourly rates are around $25 to $30 per hour. They can't do everything as a registered nurse, but they can do what we need from them during this pandemic. And part of what they will do is keeping us up to the record with respect to the COVID-19 related items, including actually temperature checks and other things. They will also help us actually with other vaccinations that we do follow up, like Tdap actually on the school side. This seems to be actually a very viable option for us, because the cost per site will be like a third of what we will, you know, incur in case we go with the registered nurse, and we are still in compliance. So that came up down to a point actually for 9 of our sites. As I said, MSA-8 doesn't need actually a nurse or CNA because they are part of a public school choice system of LAUSD over there. So the total cost came up to the number that was written on the report, around a little bit more than $500,000 for all schools. So each school is budgeted actually for two things. One, the certified nursing assistant, some 6 hours a day, plus shared cost expense of a registered nurse for all of our 9 schools. So registered nurse actually will have a schedule to go in person or directly actually dealing with each site one day in every other week or something, so that we have a centralized control over the CNA. I don't know if this is enough to explain actually, like be a response to your question. Do you need more clarification on this? We can provide you the breakdown for each site if you want.
I'm not interested in that so much as, given that we're not going to be using these people until, when do we start paying them? When they're actually
I understand. Now, we had a conversation today, Rabbi. A couple of our administrative team members brought up the issue that why do we actually need a nurse when we don't have students on site? So the reason is we must be ready actually for any type of happening at this point, and then we must be, you know, having the nurses on site so that we will be ready as soon as the school restarts. So we decided to bear that expense until the school starts. So we set up a system in place and not incur any kind of lawsuit coming actually because of not being ready when the school restarts. So our CEO mentioned also that he started seeing actually some of the school sites, you know, facing some kind of lawsuits because of not being ready with respect to the PPE or facility or vaccination or readiness, like thermometers or many other things. So we decided to incur this expense instead of paying for lawsuits in the future.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And I think it's a wise direction.
Thank you. Our CEO is very wise, actually. It was his idea. Well, most people actually, including myself, say, you know, why are we paying this? But he just came up with this, which is, I believe, is a must, I think, much better, actually, solution. Fine, yeah, it costs now instead of in the future with a terrifying lawsuit that we don't want to face actually nowadays. Is there anything else that I can help?
No, I think it's very, very helpful. And given my experience with working with nurses and stuff, I am sure that this stuff sounds like it's got a clear procedure and protocols and the right levels of nurse training so that we don't, you know, end up paying needlessly, but I think it's right that we be ready to move. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Any other questions?
Swat, I have a question. So is this the cheapest vendor we were able to find?
First of all, as you know, during the pandemic, RFP requirements, like request for proposals or all public bidding process, you know, can be overridden. Our board actually has granted the opportunity not to run through the RFP process and find actually a suitable and appropriate vendor to get related services as soon as possible. So in this case, we try to reach out like, to certain companies. So this company seems to be actually the most viable option. They can immediately provide actually all these nurses, and they are, you know, providing a continuous support for these nurses in case one goes and another one actually is ready. Well, we at this point, because we wanted to make a quick decision, this seems to be the best option at this point. But Alfredo can further answer any questions about this.
My concern is that, honestly, you're paying double than what most nurses make at that salary, at that level.
Well, I think we are open to any suggestion, but as I said, some structured actually solution comes through some kind of a company. We don't have to deal with the hiring and firing all paperwork and quality check and certifications because we are not the experts in this area. So we always use professionals. But if you have any ideas, you know, please share it with our CEO. He will be more than welcome to honor any suggestions at this point. Since I'm talking to a nurse right now, I don't want to say anything, you know.
I know, but I mean, I have a lot of friends that own agencies, but obviously I can't do that because I'm a board member.
Yeah, maybe actually we can consider, you know, any suggestions after this point, but as of now, we had a deal with this company. As far as I learned, they already made the hiring, by the way.
I mean, honestly, just because I was making that amount and I have a hired license, so, and I know that we're literally going to pay double than what they really make, and that's a lot of money, a lot.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's a general problem. When you go through a contracting agency, you always pay more, but it's not only the negative side. The positive side is we don't deal with, you know, continuous hiring and process in case somebody goes, and then let's try to find another one, which is lack of actually nurses for at least a month until you find the next one. In this one, you don't have this problem. You always have like continuous support. Rehiring is immediately made. You don't deal with this, and as I was the principal, the worst part of actually hiring and firing is it takes a lot of time from your time, the quality time that you can do something else. And also paperwork, follow-up, too much thing actually at this point. And by the way, at the time that we made this decision, the distance learning decision was not given by the state. So we had to be quick to find, you know, some kind of quick solution around. But now we just had to decide. Like today, as I said, we had to just come together with all administrators, around 30 people, home office team members. This question actually was one of the main questions. Are we going to continue with the nurses that we ordered actually from this company or stop actually working with them until the distance learning is over? So after some kind of conversation, it was decided that we have to go with them to set up the system instead of having a possible future problem. Yeah, I know this is not the cheapest solution based on my experiences, but this is the best solution at this point for us.
That's another concern too. We're literally throwing money down the drain because these people are not going to even be working for us until the kids are back and teachers are back in school. So
our expectation is
to be honest with you, just because of the way things are right now, we might be looking at coming back spring, just because winter is going to be very hard.
I will bring this issue. I will bring this issue one more time
just to clarify, Sandra, the CNAs and the rotating RN, they are going to start working as of August on the school sites. As you are aware of, all of our school sites are active right now, which means they're essential employees at the site, which means that besides the essential employees, custodial, office staff, administrators, we also have parents that come to the campus. So for us to have the CNA and our RN begin with the screenings, not only the active, but passive screenings, and we'll have an application. So that process will continue. They will also work with the RN when it comes to the student records of students with disabilities to see if there's any health conditions that we have to prepare for. So there's going to be enough work for them to do at the school sites, but more importantly, we have to ensure that the safety of our schools happens now, because they are still active. There are still many of our employees at our school sites interacting, and we are implementing those safety protocols. And one of the things that in the last 2 weeks has happened is the LA County Department of Public Health came out with their reopening protocols, and in there it spoke about screening anyone who comes to your facilities, and then the Department of the California Department of Public Health even went further to say that here are the specific trainings that have to happen, and here are the specific things you have to do with classrooms. So when Jennifer went over her slide about the five focus areas, those five focus areas are the responsibility of us as an organization to implement. So that is already going to start to happen. So it doesn't require the students to be on campus for us to start doing those screenings, for us to take all safety and protocol measures. So they will be active at the school sites in person.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions, board members? Okay, so the motion is for the board to approve the reopening of Magnolia Public Schools for instruction virtually with full distance learning models for MSA 1 through 8 on August 18th, 2020, for MSA Santa Ana on August 10th, 2020, and for MSA San Diego on August 31st, 2020. Would one of our board members like to move that motion?
Yes, I am ready to move that.
Thank you, Rabbi Balia. Was that Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. I'll go ahead and take votes again. We're on item 4A. Rabbi Balia?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanel? Dr. Dikbush?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Ms. Covarrubias?
Yes.
Mr. Mohameda?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanel? Okay, I think he may have called off, so we will count him as absent for this item, and I'll check on him. Okay, next item is 4B, LAUSD School Oversight Report 2019-20 and Plan of Action. Mr. Rubalcaba, are you presenting this item?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Barbara. So this item is specific to our LAUSD annual oversight report. So over the last two meetings, we've brought you all of the reports for our LAUSD schools, MSA 4, 6, 7, and 8, and we've also brought you different information for, the other schools. But specific to the LAUSD ones, as we mentioned in the last two meetings, there was some corrective actions that we as an organization had to take specifically to fiscal operations. And with that, as I told you before, the previous year in this area, we did receive a 4, and then this year we did receive a 3. So today I did want to walk you through what those areas are specifically, and then what are the action steps that we're taking. And again, the goal for us is to, whenever we, you know, operate our schools in whichever community, our goal is always to be fully compliant in everything we do. And if that is not the case, then take corrective steps to make that a reality. So with this specific report, the first area of focus was the late fees. So based on the Charter School Division's review of our credit card statements and supporting documentation for the period of May 2019 through October 2019, the Charter School Division did note that noted 13 card statements that referenced late fees totaling $1,470.94 in the aggregate. And the fees are summarized in the report. As you could see, late fees for MSA 4, 6, 7, and Bell, all the schools with these late fees. And you know, the issue again was that the system or the method of, you know, the process, which included, you know, the monthly statements being completed first before payments were made, which then caused the delays and caused the penalties. So the corrective action here is automatic payments have been set up to post payments on time and eliminate late fees. The reconciliation is done after payments are made to ensure accuracy. And the automatic payments started March 2020, so we've already started this system. And then if there is a default in the automatic payment setup, then staff are notified, so we're able to ensure that there's no late fees. Number two, late payments to vendors. So based on the Charter School Division's review of the school's check register for the period spanning October 1st, 2018 through October 1st, 2019, a sample of 46 checks and 12 bank transactions were selected for further review. The Charter School Division noted that 3 out of the 46 checks referenced sample of 46 checks and 12 bank transactions were selected for further review. The CDE, the Charter School Division noted that 3 the 46 checks reference invoices that were paid late, including one that referenced late fees and interest charges. The items in question are summarized below. So we showed what exactly happened in all those instances. And although there was some basis for these being paid late, you know, I think out of the 3, the last one, you know, when it comes to, well, all 3 of them, I think from correct billing addresses being something that we have a system to verify, and then contacting all vendors immediately. So making sure recurring payments and, you know, and other contracted vendors on a regular basis to request for the billing statements, like we have to make sure that that's in place, which that has already happened. Then back to the last invoice, the automatic payment has now been instituted as of March 2020. So the goal there is for these things not to happen, and we feel confident that that will be the case. And there you see the sample on the document of what those were specifically and to which vendors and the transaction description. The third one was use of alternative payment methods for school expenditures, PayPal. So based on the Charter School Division's review of a sample of the school's credit card transaction, Charter School Division noted that one school expenditure purchased through a PayPal account for the month of May 2019 in the amount of $1,203.16 dated on 5/3/29, payable to PayPal. So we had notified, and it was in our policies that we're not going to use PayPal for these things. So that's why it was flagged. And although the PayPal payment was made with, you know, our Amex card through their website. Again, if we do put something on paper and then notify the charter school division that none of our schools are using PayPal, and then it turns out that we did use PayPal, although we used the proper payment, it's still not consistent with our policy. So in this year, we make the case that we didn't use PayPal, you know, to make a direct payment, but we used our credit card. But I think ultimately here is if we're saying we're not going to use PayPal as a mechanism for, you know, making any type of payment or purchase, then that's what we're going to follow through here. The last one, which is super important to us, because obviously we're one system, and one system always ensures that we're always making sure that, you know, our all of our schools have the proper resources to be functional. So as all of you have been a part of this, we've done quite a bit of intra-organizational borrowing, which obviously is allowed under a policy. But with this one, you know, the charter schools review of various MRF governing board meetings during its 2019-20 fiscal review, including minutes dated October 10th, February 8th, June 13th, July 18th, November 22nd, and March 5th, the charter school division noted that all these dated intra-organizational loans, you know, that we had been engaging in these transactions, whether it be for San Diego or some of our schools. So the issue here was, you know, there's a policy that you have in place, and that policy indicates that whenever you do have intra-organizational loans, that at the end of the year, when you reconcile these loans, then you have to enter into a loan agreement with whichever school is receiving the intra-organizational loan, and that's consistent with FICMAT standards. So for us, what we're going to do is, leading up to the 2019-20 unaudited actuals, we're going to revise the format of our intra-organizational loan payment schedule, presented to the board, and we're going to make sure that our policy also is revised to be consistent with FICMAT. And that way, when you receive that report, it's going to show all the different intra-organizational loans, the payment schedule, and that's going to come with a loan agreement, which is consistent with our previous policy. So in these instances, when we brought this to the board last year, it didn't have a loan agreement attached to it. So that's what we're going to do leading up to the unaudited actuals. So that, in a nutshell, are the steps that we're taking. And now we're going to communicate and work in partnership with LAUSD to make sure that when they go through this process again next year, that we have a four and we're compliant with all our policies. I'm open to any questions that the board might have at this moment.
Before the board begins the discussion, is there any comments from our public? We are in item 4B. Okay, board members.
Again, I think these are in line with a serious attempt by our board to gain better control over fiscal matters. Thank you for having addressed these one by one so that we understand them. And we are heartened by the fact that we didn't want to have a three, but at least we have some way to respond to the issues that were raised.
Thank you, Rabbi Beliak. So the motion is to approve the proposed actions and next steps to be taken by MPS as recommended by LAUSD oversight staff. One of our board members move that motion.
So moved.
So Thank you, Rabbi Belia. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, I'll take Mr. Muhammad since we haven't had a second from you tonight. Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. So Ms. Covarrubias had to drop off, but we still have time. So I will go ahead and take votes. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Dinkbush?
Yes.
Gonzalez?
Yes.
Dev?
Yes.
Thank you, the motion carries. Next, we have 4C, concerning measures to address the organizational and educational impacts of the COVID-19 virus resolution number 20200723-01. Mr. Rubalcaba will present.
Thank you, Barbara. This is not new to the board. As you are all aware, that as soon as the pandemic started to spread throughout the global world, we did have to take some actions, and the first action was to pass these emergency type of resolutions that in essence gave me more authority than to be able to navigate some of the curveballs that are thrown our way during the pandemic and be able to act quickly and firmly on these areas, and then be able to notify the board of all the actions we've taken. So for instance, the purchasing of PPE, the purchasing of technology that we did, without having to obviously come to the board every time we make these purchases if they exceed 25,000, and also with other items when it comes to policy, whether it be looking at the pay scale for teachers and all personnel, to be able to look at that, make some changes, and then bring it to the board. And more importantly, I think all these things are done with the intent of making sure that our school communities are health and safe. They're safe and everything is, going well. So with this motion now is now specific to this fiscal year to give me some of these additional authorizations. I won't read through all of them, but I think I'll read through some of them that I do think carry some weight. All of them do, but I'm not gonna go through all of them. But what is being asked is for you as a board to authorize me to develop and implement a plan for reopening schools in the fall 2020 in accordance with guidance and directives from the chartering authority and local, state, and federal government officials, including but not limited to relevant authorities. So we are creating those policies. We'll bring that to you on the 6th. And then also the plan to include, but is not limited to, any changes necessary to comply with public health guidance and directives from relevant authorities, physical distancing requirements, cleaning requirements, screening requirements, hygiene training, protective equipment, quarantine, transportation plans, vehicle infection control, Cal OSHA requirements, lunch and recess period procedures, nutrition service changes, addressing needs of students and employees with underlying health conditions. So just a lot of things specific to now us reopening, creating those plans, operationally those plans. The other thing would be the CEO shall review and update the emergency preparedness plan, school safety plan, continuity operations plan, health safety policy for COVID-19, and injury and illness prevention plan, which we're working on right now, and we'll bring those to you on the 6th. And to comply with any guidance that comes our way from relevant authorities, that's attendance certification process that typically we bring before the board. Now I'm kind of bypassing those. So then I'll go down to I think one that is, all of them again are relevant. But again, number 13, CEO is authorized to implement layoffs, furloughs, salary freezes, and salary reductions to the extent permitted under any applicable employment contracts and state law in order to effectuate the provisions of the resolution and to maintain fiscal solvency, notwithstanding cuts and federal deferrals of funding from the state of California. And then also the CEO, in consultation with Magnolia's granting agencies, if required, may implement revisions to the academic calendar for the 2020 academic year, if necessary. And that also includes, moving around instructional minutes. Although we meet the requirements, there's some flexibility there. And then CEO or chief financial officer shall prepare and file all necessary requests and supporting documentation to preserve full apportionment funding. I'll go to number 19 because this one does have to do with, you know, making purchases, but then bringing that to you at the next board meeting. The CEO, after consulting the Magnolia board chair, shall have the authority to exceed the 25,000 limit that would ordinarily trigger the requirement to also obtain approval of the board of directors under board fiscal policies in order to pay for expenses related to the implementation of guidance and directives from relevant authorities and other government agencies relating to the reopening or operation of Magnolias and schools and to implement the plan. However, the cumulative total of such expenses shall not reduce the unrestricted reserves of any Magnolia school to lower than 3% without prior approval of the Magnolia board. Additionally, all such expenditures shall be reported to the board and ratify at the board's next regularly scheduled meeting. The CEO and board chair should be mindful of Magnolia School's current fiscal condition in authorizing such expenditures. So this is important because although I, you know, might act firmly and nimbly to try to purchase, whether it be PPE or to do disinfecting using a vendor for all of our schools, to make sure that they're, you know, up to code and up to safety standards, then obviously bring that, that expense to the board to be ratified. So that's a little different than it was before, but I think now with the new year, this might be a constant. Hopefully it's not. Hopefully we don't have to use those funds. We could use the operational funds that we have. But again, these things will be done in this order. I will say the CEO is authorized to seek material revisions to charters of the Magnolia schools as necessary to implement the plan to reopen schools and other changes that may be necessary to ensure the fiscal stability of Magnolia schools or to maintain the educational excellence of Magnolia schools programs during the pandemic. So this one right now, because of the pandemic, although we've been doing distance learning, the legislature has said no need to modify or revise your petitions. But if something did come where we did have to, I would be able to do so without the board's approval if needed to be done, and then obviously bring it back at a later date. So I won't go through the rest of them. There's 28. So again, I'm asking the board to give me that authority to then be nimble in making these decisions, so long as I bring these decisions to the board at a later time, and I also consult with the chair. At this time, I'll take any questions. This, I believe, will be our fourth resolution specific to COVID-19 emergency declaration, but this will be our first one specific to this academic and school.
This will be our fifth resolution. Any comments from our
Thank you for that clarification, Barbara.
No problem. Okay, no comments from our public board members. Any comments or questions?
Just to remind the CEO that my phone is usually in working condition.
I hear you loud and clear, Rabbi. Thank you for that.
I mean, we're giving you, of course, the responsibility that's necessary to respond to a very difficult situation. But, you know, please check in.
Yes, no, definitely. I will check in on many matters. Sometimes it's a matter of, you know, time, but I know it's important to keep you all abreast of everything, and I will continue to do that.
Okay.
If there are no further questions on this item, the motion is to approve resolution 20200723-01 concerning measures regarding the concerning measures to address ongoing impacts of COVID-19 during school reopening. Would one of our board members like to move that motion?
I can make the motion. This is Amit.
Thank you, Dr. Yapana. Welcome back. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Was that Mr. Mohammadev?
Yes.
I'll go ahead and take both. Rabbi Belia?
Yes.
Yapana?
Yes.
Mr. Dikbash?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mohammadev?
Yes.
Great. The motion carries. So next item is 4D. At this item is board approval ratification of compensation comparability study for our CEO and superintendent position. And at this time, our board chair will have an oral report. You will read out.
Thank you, everyone. This item has been a little delayed, but very important to us, and that is that we are finally able to report that we have concluded an evaluation process and a contract process. And the procedures for this require that I read the following script into the minutes of this meeting. And it's been cleared and prepared by our attorneys, as has the various documents. So we're seeking formal approval of an agreement with our CEO for the coming year. And I'll read the script now. As to the next item regarding approval of CEO superintendent's employment contract. Okay, I read that to you. Prior to any vote on the contract, the CEO superintendent's contract provides the following. The contract is 1 year, 2020 to 2021, which provides a base annual salary of $220,000. Standard health benefits are provided to certified employees. I would also add that the annual salary is wholly in keeping with the compensation comparability study the board has received. I'm also pleased to recommend approval of this contract and call for a vote on it. Looking for a second.
So that's, yes, that's the script. So this motion is approving the compensation comparability study along with the CEO and superintendent contract through June 30th, 2021. Do you have further discussion, Rabbi Beliak, or can we open it up for public comment?
We'll start with public comment.
Okay. Any public comments on these items? So this is 4D and E. Okay. Any comments from our board members or questions? Okay, so let's do the first motion for item 4D. The motion is to approve the compensation comparability study for the CEO and superintendent position of Magnolia Public Schools. Do we have a motion? I mean, sorry, would someone like to move that motion?
I'll move the motion.
Thank you, Ms. Was that Dr. Yapanow?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. I will take votes. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanow?
Yes.
Dr. Dikbash?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The motion carries. So the last action was already discussed. So the motion is to approve the CEO and superintendent contract extension through June 30th, 2021. Would one of our board members like to move?
So move.
I move the motion.
Okay, Rabbi Beliak made the motion and Dr. Dikbash second. Thank you both. I'll take votes. Rabbi Beliak?
Yes.
Dr. Yapanow?
Yes.
Dr. Dikbash?
Yes.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The motion carries. So that is the end of tonight's agenda. Any last questions? Okay, the next meeting is August 6th. And Rabbi, can you officially adjourn the meeting? It is 8:09 p.m.
Yes, I'd like to thank everybody for their participation. It was a very detailed meeting, and we appreciate the effort of the staff, and the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.